Welcome in. It's another edition of First Attend the Podcast, where we bring you the best Southeastern Conference football talk coming at you every week. Yeah, anywhere from 40 to 45 minutes, depending on how annoyed I am. And I'm pretty annoyed this week, to be honest with you. We got some good games, including Georgia going to the hallowed grounds of Notre Dame. Touchdown, Jesus, the Grotto, the Leprechaun, the Bucolic Campus there in Northern Indiana. If you've never been there, it is absolutely a bucket list trip. Gotta do it. Got to do it. Got a nice guest today. We got Sony Michel, Georgia's star tailback. We'll talk with him about that trip and his sort of side rap career. Ask him what's tougher, you think? What do you think would be tougher? Playing in the NFL for, 8 to 10 years, or landing a major label rap contract? We'll talk to Sony. We'll also get into the big games, the craziness of social media and how it sets wildfires throughout the sport, and of course the gray garbage can at Tennessee. All right, but before we do that, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, TicketCity.com. Look, you know how much it is for tickets. You know how much you invest for college football weekends. It's the drive, it's the hotel, it's the tickets, it's the tailgating, it's the 3 a.m. trip to Denny's. If it's an 8 o'clock kick, don't tell me you've never been there. Don't even tell me that, okay? Look, you invest money, you invest time. Why not go to the place that can get you the tickets that you want, okay? We've been working with Ticket City for a long time. They are the experts in college football, having served over 1.5 million customers. They've been, people, the place to go for SEC tickets for almost 30 years. Now, they're offering $20 off to all Saturday Down South podcast listeners. All you need to do is go to TicketCity.com and enter the discount code SDS20. That's Sally, Delta Sally, 20, while checking out, and save $20 on your order. So go to TicketCity.com. That's TicketCity.com. That's TicketCity.com. And get those SEC Dukets today. All right, let's get right into it. We're here with star Georgia tailback Sony Michel. Sony, how hard did Notre Dame recruit you?
They recruited me pretty well, I would say, coming out of high school. I visited them a couple times. It was a great visit. Great coaching staff over there. And, it was exciting times.
Were you blown away by the whole Notre Dame experience? Was that something that was attractive?
I thought it was a pretty cool experience. It was something that I've never experienced before, so I thought it was eye-catching the times I went up there.
Sony, did you ever seriously consider playing for them, or was it something where, as a Florida guy, you can't see yourself spending winters there?
I considered it until, thought about the winter times and some of those cold times. But,
just no good, huh?
Yeah.
So listen, you and Nick have subbed for each other during injuries. Have you spoken to Jake about taking over for a starter and what his mindset should be?
I've talked to Jake, but I think his mindset is already focused on stepping in and playing that big role. And I think he's a natural born leader, and he knows what's expected out of him, and I think he got the right mindset, and he's, ready to play some football.
Sony, he can throw it too, right? I mean, he can make every throw.
Oh, yeah. He can make every throw. He can check. He can make certain calls. He's pretty comfortable back there.
Was there a point in the spring where you're watching him, you thought, wait a second, this guy's got it, man. He's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, just by his presence, just like I said earlier, his leadership says it all, and how he carries himself on and off the field.
So, Sony, we hear coaches talk all the time about next man up, but But is it a little different when it happens and you're thrust into that role? Do you feel more pressure as the next man up?
I don't think so far, guys, because that's something, you know, Coach Smart emphasized a lot. You know, he tells guys all the time, you know, you're one snap away from playing. And I think we practice that way. I think everybody in practice get reps. So when your number is called, you're prepared. So I think, you know, I would say majority of our guys on our team, if they had to step in and play and they're not used to playing right away, they'll be ready.
So there's no different mindset for you guys going in this game, whether it's Jacob Eason or Jake Fromm. Then you guys are just going, right?
Yeah, we're going. We practice with each quarterback, and I think we're prepared. We're practicing hard, and I think we're ready no matter which quarterback is playing.
So, Sony, clearly you want to play in the NFL, but what about your rap career? Where does that fit in your timeline, you think?
My rap is just a hobby. It's something I do on my spare time. You know, football is my number one love. Football is something I'm going to continue to try to do for as long as I can.
What do you think would be more difficult, spending significant time in the NFL or landing a rapping contract with a major label?
Which one would be more difficult? It'd probably be
rapping,
trying to get a major label.
Really? The harder than playing in the NFL for 8-10 years?
Yeah.
It's just that tough of a business to get into?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, me, I've played football all my life. It's something I'm used to doing. You know, it's something I've been doing since I was young and something I'm really used to and something I'm comfortable doing.
Fantastic. Sony, listen, I appreciate the help. I know you're very busy. Thanks a lot. Good luck Saturday, all right?
Appreciate it.
All right, that's Sony Michel, star Georgia tailback. A guy I think never gets enough credit for what he's done there at Georgia in 3 years. A little bit overshadowed by Nick Chubb because, I mean, the reality is Nick Chubb is just an absolute freak. Sony Michel is going to play a while in the NFL. I was talking to a scout a couple weeks ago about Sony Michel. Love the way that he not only can run, but he's a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's proven he can be durable, even though he's been nicked up a couple times. They love him. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Sony Michel become the type of back where he's not the guy everybody focuses on, but all of a sudden, a couple years down the road, he becomes a significant contributor to a team, sort of like Terrell Davis, not in a situation where he's going to be a Hall of Fame running back, but I think similar to the fact that he's a guy that's been overlooked, but all of a sudden will play very well in the NFL. Look, this is a big game for Georgia. There's no other way to look at this. Yeah, it's week two, but you're going to play Notre Dame, nationally televised game in South Bend, touchdown Jesus, overlooking it all. It's a big game for Jake Fromm. You know, and I think when you look at this from a Georgia perspective, this is a game where you find out a lot about yourself, about who you are and about where you're headed. Because the truly elite teams in the elite conference in the game figure out a way to get by injuries. Granted, quarterback is a big injury. And I've said it once, I'll say it 1,000 times. There is no more important position on the field from Pop Warner to high school to college to pro. You got to have a quarterback. And the loss of Jacob Eason for no matter how long, who knows how long it's going to be. He's got a sprained knee ligament. It's not like he's bouncing back in a week or two. That's going to be some significant time. So it's Jake Fromm's team right now. He's got to go up on the road in a tough place to play. He's going to need some help. He's going to need some help from Sony Michel and Nick Chubb in the run game. He's going to need help from Jacob Wims on the outside. Isaac Nott on those little skinny post patterns. You know, when you get in trouble, just look for Isaac Nott. They've got to be able to throw the ball with efficiency or Notre Dame's just simply going to load up on the run game and Georgia's going to be in deep trouble. You know, and I know you're thinking right now, well, I mean, it's Notre Dame. They were 4-8 last year. How tough a game could this be for Georgia? Let me tell you something. Notre Dame lost 7 games in the fourth quarter last year. That Notre Dame team last year had a lot of the same players, and really a lot of the same players this year, except for, of course, quarterback DeShone Kizer, who is just a terrific player, going to be a great NFL player. But I digress. Let's go back. Notre Dame was a last-second field goal against Stanford in 2015, more than likely making the college football playoff. They come out last year, a lot of problems. Kaiser kind of underperformed. A lot of different things happened, and it kind of snowballed on them. They lost 7 games in the fourth quarter. That's a very good team. It's a program that has recruited very well under Brian Kelly. They've got legitimate dudes on the interior lines, SEC-type players. Brandon Wimbush can throw it really well. Yep, he's a first-year starter. They played Temple in week one, and they dismantled Temple. But you know what? That's what good teams do in those week one games when they're playing the overmatched and the teams that really don't have a chance. The good teams put them away, and they play well, and they look good doing it. I'm not a guy who thinks, oh, well, the first week it was just a patsy. They scored 50 points. Believe me, that's what you're supposed to do, and it's a lot harder now in college football to do what you're supposed to do than not. And I think that's wildly overlooked. You look at Josh Adams, he's a terrific tailback. What do you have, like 150, 160 last week against a pretty good Temple defense? You know, Notre Dame's got some decent, better than decent, some pretty good skill players. Equanimous St. Brown is a very good guy on the outside. He will win individual battles. Durham Smith's a terrific tight end. He's a guy who will beat linebackers. They're going to have to put somebody in the back four on him. He will run by a linebacker. And Notre Dame's in a situation where, you know what? They were embarrassed by last year. I spent some time with Brian Kelly in the spring for a profile I did on him for Bleacher Report. And believe me, this is a guy who's won everywhere he's been. He's won championships. He's won big games. Before last season, he was within, again, like we said earlier, a last-second field goal from Stanford from bringing Notre Dame to the BCS National Championship game and possibly the college football playoff in a 4-year span. He knows what he's doing. He's a terrific coach, and he also was humbled by last year. He was humbled that his athletic director had to give him a quote-unquote vote of confidence 9 months after they extended his contract 6 years. So he's got a lot to prove. That program's got a lot to prove. Frankly, I think Georgia's going into a little hornet's nest when they go into South Bend this weekend. They're going to have to play a flat-out A game. And I know that's a cliche, and I know you hear that all the time from all those talking heads on ESPN. But believe me, Georgia is going to have to flat-out play this weekend to win that game. Notre Dame is a very good team, and that means Jake Fromm's going to have to play smart. He's going to have to protect the ball. They're going to have to run the ball with Chubb and Michael. And they're going to have to play really strong on defense. You know, and oh, by the way, that's one of my weekly 5 picks over at First and 10, the column, that Saturday down south. And, you know, I don't want to brag, but it's against the spread, so it's not where you're just throwing out names and guessing where it's 50-50. When you're going against the spread, a lot different. 4-1 last week. The only game I lost was Florida. I took Florida in the points, and it probably wasn't a good idea. I like Notre Dame -6.5. I think Notre Dame's going to play really well. I think this is Notre Dame's statement game, and you are asking a lot of Jake Fromm to go on the road for the first time in that environment. You know, when you've never experienced something like that. You're going against a talented team that's playing with a chip on its shoulder because they played so poorly last year. That's a lot to ask of a freshman quarterback to go in there. The other 4 picks, I like Arkansas +3 against TCU. I like South Carolina -2.5 at Missouri. Take Auburn in the 5.5. Against Clemson. I think Clemson's going to win the game outright, but Auburn's going to, those 5.5 will help you cover there. And I love Mississippi State -7 against Louisiana Tech. I'm telling you right now, people, I've been saying this all offseason. I love Mississippi State. sleeper in the West, along with my sleeper in the East, South Carolina. Both those guys looked really good last week. Really good. Again, I'm not telling you to bet. If I was a betting man, that's what I would bet. Okay, moving along. I want to get into this deal. I don't even know what else to call it at Tennessee with the trash can. What in the world is going on at Tennessee? So we saw this in the Georgia Tech game Monday night. There's the Tennessee staffer. He's probably more than likely like a manager of some sort. I don't think they would make a grad assistant do that. Some guy connected with the staff who, when the defense is on the field, is walking around with a garbage can, a big gray garbage can above his head. You know, the garbage can has the orange and white checkerboard around the top of it. It says Team 121, you know, which is kind of Butch's deal about the 121st team at Tennessee, and last year was 120, and the year before one. You get it. You get it. And then it's got HTB on it. You know, I'm not big on acronyms just in general, but if you literally have no idea what something means and you're forcing this acronym, makes it even worse. So HTB apparently stands for Hunt the Ball. And the idea is you force turnovers. Because turnovers, as you all know, turnover differential is the way you win games. That's how it works. But in the real world, it's forcing turnovers. It's getting the ball. But at Tennessee, it's Hunt the Ball. Hunt the Ball. I'm not even exactly sure what that means or why it's that. But to me, let's go back to the genesis of this thing. Because at some point, there had to be some kind of team meeting where a group of coaches were sitting around a table and they looked at each other and said, we need an idea for our defense to get these guys fired up to get some turnovers. Our turnover ratio isn't where it should be. Let's motivate these guys. So what do you do? What's the idea? A big gray trash can. And when the defense is on the field, you have a guy walking around holding it up over his head. And then when you get the turnover, the player who forces the turnover or gets the fumble or gets the interception runs over and dunks it in the trash can because you've got a turnover. Or apparently you've hunted the ball. HTB, people. H to the T to the B. Hunt the ball. Except at some point in that meeting when this happened, was there not one guy among that staff, while this idea was floating around the room, was there not one guy with the guts to stand up and say, you guys realize we're going to be walking around with a trash can over our head? And the one thing people symbolize with a trash can, and listen, I don't know if you've seen it or not, it's literally a trash can, like you bring down to the end of the street for the garbage man to pick up. So the one thing that everyone symbolizes with a trash can is what? Garbage. Garbage. So in this day and age, if I may use the Joe Pesci line from Goodfellas, are you kidding me? In this day and age, where social media dictates everything, you're going to allow a guy to walk along your sideline with a refuse can over his head. So I'm listening, or should say watching this game Monday, and I just send like this little funny, smart aleck tweet out about the trash can. And I said, and I hashtagged it Meme City. 2 minutes later, people, 2 minutes, I get a response from a guy who's already Photoshopped it. That is the beauty of the greatest, worst thing ever, which is what I call social media. Twitter and Facebook are the greatest, worst thing ever, people. 2 minutes later, I get this meme. A guy has Photoshopped, guess who, in the trash can? That would be Butch Jones. He's halfway out. His arms are folded. He's got a mean look on his face. He's got the headset on. And he's in the trash can. You get the symbolism there? Garbage in, garbage out. And here's the best part. After the game, Butch was asked about the garbage can. Couldn't understand why everybody was making such a big deal about it. Couldn't understand why social media had basically caught on fire about it. Again, I think Butch has done a great job at Tennessee. Back-to-back 9-win seasons. I mean, what was there before? And you're going to run this guy? If he doesn't win 8 games? I mean, come on. But this is the guy who coined the phrases champions of life. You remember that one? The five-star hearts of his recruits. He doesn't want five-star recruits. He wants five-star hearts. Hearts! And Tennessee got, like, rings for winning the Virginia Tech game in the Bristol Motor Speedway. Rings. And now it's the trash can. So Butch says after the game, it's never meant anything as far as being disrespectful of the opponent. It's just something that heightened awareness of turnovers and having some fun with it. Our kids enjoy it. Who in their right mind, the first thing would be, yeah, they're being disrespectful of the opponent. Who would think that? I'm not exactly sure how it's heightened the awareness of turnovers, but, I mean, maybe it has. I mean, you know, I don't coach 18, 19, 20-year-old kids for a living. Well, you got to motivate them daily. But, I mean, this is just my guess. Again, I'm not a coach. I'm not having one of my guys run around on the sideline with a trash can over his head in the middle of a game. Just not doing it. I mean, I might be a little more concerned about the 18,000 rushing yards I gave up to Georgia Tech. I might be a little more concerned why it took almost 4 quarters to realize, get the ball to John Kelly. Get the ball to Marquez Callaway. Tennessee's got some players, man. I'm telling you, they do. Quentin Dormady kind of found himself there in the third and fourth quarter. He struggled early, absolutely struggled. He kind of found himself there in the second half of that game. I think Tennessee's got something there with Dormady, and I think they've got some really good skill players defensively. Woo! Got a long way to go. Long way. And believe me, I said last week that Georgia Tech has made a lot of teams look really bad with that offense. But if you've got 9 months to prepare for that, and you know what's coming, you don't give up 18,000 rushing yards, man. You just absolutely do not. So to me, that's a little bit of a red flag. You know, that defense will get better this week against Indiana State. And then it's week three. It's week three, and it's two teams that are absolutely desperate. And now suddenly two coaches. Butch always was in a situation where you can just tell the Tennessee fans are just waiting to turn on him. And now with what happened in week one with Florida and how Michigan just absolutely annihilated Florida, piece by piece, that offensive line that Jim McElwain had been saying all offseason was going to be not only the strength of the team, but be the reason why he has his best team in Gainesville. They were absolutely embarrassed in that game. And now suddenly, I know this is going to shock a lot of you, social media, the nutwings on social media have all turned on Jim McElwain. Now how big is that game in Gainesville? After Tennessee broke that 11-game losing streak last year, coming back from a 21-3 deficit, What happens if Tennessee wins that game? What happens with Jim McElwain then? And then you flip it around. What if Florida finds itself, beats Tennessee, and then all of a sudden, the social media wing nuts, guess what they're saying then? Then the narrative, and again, we talked about narrative now, remember. Then the narrative becomes, are you kidding me? Butch's team gives up 18,000 rushing yards to Georgia Tech, beats who cares Indiana State, and then the game that matters can't beat a Florida team that looked absolutely lost against Michigan. I'm just telling you, people, this is what happens in the world of social media, in the world of social media pushing the narrative. And if you don't think it has any kind of power or control in college football, you are sadly, sadly mistaken. Because there's a guy by the name of Tony Busby who's a member of the Board of Regents of Texas A&M. And after A&M gave up a 34-point lead with 4 minutes to go in the third quarter, he writes his own little manifesto on Facebook, how Kevin Sumlin must go, and how if the vote happens, he's going to vote fire. One game into the season. One game. And this region at Texas A&M, who, now, the regents of school, the regents, some places they call them trustees, okay? These people, they don't hire and fire football coaches. The only people they hire and fire are university presidents or chancellors, okay? The idea of a board of regents or board of trustees is a group of people that supports the university mission. And by Tony Busby coming out on social media and saying Kevin Sumlin must go, he's underlying what everyone thinks, and more times than not is not true, that college football is run by big-name boosters, regents, trustees. Busby's a big-time attorney in Houston, okay? There's a reason why that's the prevailing wisdom of who runs college football programs. And Tony Busby, this member of the Board of Regents of Texas A&M, came right out and showed everyone why they think that way. And then underscored the reality of the dangers of social media pushing the narrative. And now already 1 week into the season, Kevin Sumlin, who clearly needed to win, his athletic director was on the Paul Feinbaum show in the summer and said flat out he needs to win. 1 week into the season, someone's already hearing it from a disgruntled regent. How many people do you think that affected? That one little Facebook post, okay? How many Texas A&M fans, when they read that, immediately got on board? If you don't think that that's a significant number, you're walking around with your head in the sand. Because there's power in social media, great power. And if you have a voice and you have a title behind that voice, you can affect change. You absolutely can. And Tony Busby may be a guy who says, oh, I'm only one name, I'm only one vote. That's crazy. Because one voice grows louder and louder and louder as it reaches more and more and more people. You know, I go back to the old Ron Zook saying, and boy, the Zucker nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. In the early 2000s, when he was coaching at Florida, he called it the, quote, noise in the system. This is long before Twitter, long before Facebook. Zucker, you laugh at him now, Florida fans. He nailed it. That's the noise in the system. Only now, everybody's got an opinion. Everybody shares it on 140 characters on Twitter or as many characters as you want on Facebook. And the reach, the unfathomable reach of social media and its impact and its effect on everything it touches is incredibly, incredibly underrated. I wanted to be positive this podcast. I really did. I really did. I wanted to talk about Todd Grantham's impact as defensive coordinator at Mississippi State. I think it's only going to get better. I wanted to talk about the new LSU pass game with Matt Canada coordinating the system, teaching Danny Etling that, you know what, you don't have to check down every time. Every once in a while, you can throw it deep and give your guy a chance to go get it, which is what he did against BYU. I wrote that a week ago in First and Ten, the column on Saturday Down South, and it just played out exactly like I had written it. And it's going to play out that way throughout the season. I think that's going to make LSU a really dangerous team. Really dangerous. I wanted to be positive, and then Tony Busby came along. You know, and I want to talk about South Carolina, and I want to talk about Jake Bentley. Jake Bentley is one of those once in a 10, 20, 25-year type quarterbacks that comes along that can change a program. And I think going into Jake Bentley's freshman season, there were pretty much two people who knew that. Muschamp and Bobby Bentley, who was Jake's dad and the running backs coach at South Carolina. This, everyone, is a legit first-round NFL 6'4", 225-pound, can make every throw in the book quarterback. They played a very good North Carolina State defense last week. Just a wicked front seven North Carolina State defense last week. And Jake Bentley played absolutely terrific. Terrific. You know, and I think at some point, you look at what he did. You look at how smart he played. He only threw the ball 29 times. Okay? But his completions were so smart. He had three touchdowns. He never really forced anything. The rollout, escaping pressure, 40-plus yard throw that Deebo Samuel caught with one hand for a touchdown was unbelievable. The catch was terrific. To me, the one-hand catch, I mean, terrific. To me, the throw was so much better than the catch. You're talking about a guy who spun out of a rush, rolled to his right, and just threw a laser on the run. A laser. And you got a guy like that. You got a quarterback like that that can make throws like that, that can make plays out of nothing. That has a guy like Deebo Samuel on the outside. That has a guy like Hayden Hurst at tight end who absolutely will get open against anyone and will catch anything thrown at him. They just need a little more help in the run game. I don't know if that's Rico Dowdell. I don't know where they get it from. They just need a little help in the run game. Because they're getting there on defense. They're not quite there. If you're talking about elite SEC-style defenses, they're not quite there. But you know what? Auburn's defense in 2010 wasn't quite there either. Now, I'm not comparing Cam Newton to Jake Bentley. But my point is, you can win a lot of games in the SEC if you're very good at the quarterback spot. And I truly believe that South Carolina not only is very good at the quarterback spot, they're much better than people think they are. Jake Bentley's going to make a lot of defenses look bad this year. A lot. He's good enough to lead them to an East Division title. He absolutely is. And they got a big game this week. It's on the road against Missouri. And yeah, Missouri's defense looked awful last week against Missouri State. But that's a league game. Missouri's going to be ready. They're on the road, South Carolina. That's a game you got. If you're South Carolina and you are a legit contender for the East, which I think they are, you got to go in there and get the job done. No matter what it takes, no matter what it takes, no matter how ugly it is, you got to go in there, play hard, and get out of there with a W. Any road win in the SEC, as cliched as it sounds, people, any road win in that league is big. I don't care who you're playing. That's a big game for South Carolina. It's going to set up a nice little run that continues with Kentucky next week, Louisiana after that, both of them at home, Louisiana Tech. You know, then you're sitting there, you win that game against Missouri, you're sitting there at 4-0, and you got to travel to College Station on September 30th, which could be a situation where you're saying, you know what, we win that game, we are now the team that everyone thinks we couldn't be. And they're almost there. All it takes is that quarterback. All it takes is that elite quarterback that gets everybody to believe they can play an elite level and gets other guys to raise their games to his level. That's what the great players do. That might sound corny and contrived, but I'm telling you right now, that was Michael Jordan's big thing. He was so good. Everybody else in that Bulls team played to his level. He raised their performance. The great players do that. And I truly believe that Jake Bentley has that potential. He's got that potential to play at that elite level and to force everyone else in that team to just go balls out four quarters. All right, and now we've saved the best for last. Now we move to Auburn and Clemson. I mean, that's what a game for week two. What a game. And if you are an Auburn fan and you watched Clemson last weekend and you watched Kelly Bryant do what he did to Kent State, you watched him perform at that high level. And again, I know you're going to say it's Kent State, but I'm telling you right now, people, elite teams see those games, those Kent State-type games, the Louisiana Monroe-type games, the Miami Ohio-type games, and they absolutely chew them up and spit them out. That's what Clemson did, 56-3. You do not let someone in a game like that. You do not let down in a game like that. The Clemson defense played fantastic. Kelly Bryant, I'm telling you right now, he can make every throw. Got a strong arm, terrific runner. Now we get to see what it's going to be like when it's a legit team on the other side of the ball. Okay? A legit team with a very good defense that can rush the passer and that can cover in the secondary. You know, a lot of quarterbacks, you'll see they'll put up numbers in games that, you know, where they overmatch people, which is what Clemson did. They overmatched Kent State. Again, I'm not taking anything away from that game. That's an important game. It's an important win. Good teams take care of those teams, just like Auburn took care of Georgia Southern. That stuff happens. That's what's supposed to happen, okay? Now I want to see what Kelly Bryant does when he's faced with a little pressure. Because that's what happens with quarterbacks. That's when you start to tell what kind of quarterback you truly have, what kind of offense you truly can be. And it's not just Kelly Bryant. I mean, let's be fair. It's going to be Jarrett Stidham too. I mean, the Clemson defensive line is as good as any D-line that Auburn will see this year, including Alabama. They're very good. So those two quarterbacks are going to be going up against ferocious defensive lines. that could probably get Rush on their own, those four. So then you're looking at seven deep sometimes. Maybe they'll rush five. Then you're looking at six deep. There aren't many holes out there. So if you're Auburn and you can get pressure with four, or you're Clemson and you can get pressure with four, you're going to force Kelly Bryant and Jarrett Stidham to find holes out there, to put the ball where it needs to be. Then you're going to see what kind of offense each of these teams have. Then you're going to see, is Jarrett Stidham the type of quarterback that can make Auburn elite again, which I think he is. Then you're going to see, is Kelly Bryant the type of quarterback that can allow Clemson to stay at the elite level, which I think he is. I mean, we may be in a situation here where it's just an absolute knockdown, drag out, 27-24 game. They both play really well, but somebody's got to win one of those type games. I don't see this thing as Clemson walking away or Auburn going in there and walking away. I just don't see it. This is going to be a tight game beginning to end. But I love these games, boy. I love these games where you've got quarterbacks that everybody thinks are going to be really good players. Or if it's the first, you know, early in the season, it's the first month and you really haven't played anyone and they played really well, then all of a sudden you're going to play a defense that means something. I love watching how quarterbacks react in those games, how they react to pressure. That's just so important. What they do decision-making wise, do they hurry throws? Do they completely get out of their mechanics and the ball sails on them or the ball doesn't drops on them? There's so many different things that can happen when you start playing a legit defense that can get a rush with four and can drop six or seven and forces you, when you've got three receivers, to find a hole with five, six, or seven guys back there. That's the game. That's the fun part of this. All right, before we wrap up here, I want to send you to SaturdayDownSouth.com to read the first and 10 column, because lead item there is about a proposed NCAA bylaw that would give players immediate eligibility if they're transferring. Whereas the rule now is you got to sit out a year. So there's penalty for transferring. And it's really, when you think about it, it's the ultimate hypocrisy of the amateur model. Coaches can leave and go whenever they want, whatever year they want, with no penalty other than if there's a buyout. Players cannot do it. Players have to sit out a season. And in some instances, coaches from their former teams will prevent them or forbid them from going to another school and getting a scholarship. So this new proposed rule that could be voted on would eliminate all that. Not only would they have immediate eligibility after they transfer, but coaches would not be able to give them a list of schools where they can't transfer to. I mean, it's a huge, huge deal. If it happens, and I don't know that it's going to happen, you know, it's still got to pass executive committee, it's still got to pass a vote. I don't know that it happens, but if it does, it will be absolutely groundbreaking, because then you will have free agency every single offseason. And if you think quarterbacks leave now too much, too often, too soon, wait and see what happens if this rule goes through. Wait and see how many quarterbacks leave then. Wait and see how many running backs or wide receivers or pass rushers. I mean, does Deshaun Hand, does he not play for 3 years at Alabama if he can leave right away and have no penalty? If he could leave right away and say, all right, I'm going to go to Michigan. It was down to Michigan or Alabama. If he says, all right, I'm going to Michigan now. All right, I'm gone. I'm not playing now, so I'm going to Michigan. I mean, I don't know if he would, but that's a question that has to be asked now for every player, especially the elite players. So you're going to put a coach in a situation where not only are you recruiting the player, then you sign the player, all right? And then in the fall when they start competing for a spot, if they don't win a job, guess what? You got to keep recruiting him. Keep recruiting him and keep convincing him to stay the following season, while at the same time recruiting behind him just in case he does leave. It will be an absolute nightmare for coaches. It'll make the recruiting game, which is already shaky and shady, even worse. that thing passes, whoo, it will absolutely change the face of college football. All right, that's going to wrap up this week's First and Ten the podcast. I want to remind you to like it, subscribe it, all those things, good things you're supposed to do when you enjoy what you're listening to, and we hope you are enjoying it on the Saturday Down South Network. We will see you next week.